Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in.
Welcome back to another edition of Leaving Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas. Dude, I almost dropped my orange juice, my cup of orange juice on my laptop right now. Hope everybody's doing great. Sorry about last week, but since we did the Cota Martinez post-reaction and thoughts on a Saturday night, it was immediately after the pay-per-view, and because of the travels of Gabriel Montoya going to New York and back to L.A., that I gave up the time slot for the next round on Tuesday. So hopefully everybody tuned in on Tuesday's show for the next round with Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya, and they enjoyed that segment. But we're back here, back on a regular schedule, Tuesday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. here on Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm waiting for my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. We got a lot of stuff to cover here on Leaving the Ring, like always, boxing here to talk, and hopefully get a confirmation about a guest that might come on. It was a kind of a last-minute thing. So hopefully we can get them on. I'm not really sure. Fight fans, you want to call in? Of course you can. 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring with your host, Dave Duenas, and Mr. Late as hell right now, Gabriel Montoya, the Dark Cloud. I don't know what's going on with him. I think he's running uphill to his house right now to get on the air to talk some boxing here. So hopefully he gets on in about a few more minutes here. Let's see. Before I even start giving my input for this past weekend fight and about this upcoming weekend fight, I think it's a good card, a nice little stack card happening from Golden Boy. It's one of the fights that still has Al Haymon involved. You got Robert Guerrero, you got Devon Alexander. Who else, man? I can't even think about it right now, but it'll come to my mind right now. Let's see. Let's pass in some fight fans really quick before we get Mr. Gabriel Montoya back on with us. He'll be on Leaving the Ring. Well, there he is, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. What's up, brother? You there?
I am. Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear.
I got the new headset, man. The Ghost Recon or Shadow Army, we kill people in first person headphones, limited edition, E3. I'm very excited. I think we can finally actually hear me, as opposed to the muted iPhone headphones I've been using for years. How you doing, Dave?
I'm doing good. I was just saying how I almost dropped my cup of orange juice on my laptop by accident when I was reaching to grab my mic. I ended up hitting it, and it kind of teeter-tottered, and I caught it before it could spill. But I was going to patch in some fight fans right now here on Leaving the Ring to talk some boxing, but you came in, so I'll just wait for a few seconds before I do that. But I guess we should get down right to it about this past Saturday fight. Dimitri's boo-boo, Andrade, Adrian, whatever you want to call him. You know what? He had Brian Rose with him, which is, you know, a guy that his resume wasn't something you could really go, ooh, this guy can give him problems. I think he was a good match where it shows the skill level where Demetrius is at. But to really say exactly where he's at and if he can move out of the B level to get into the A level, I mean, there's no argument that the kid has some skills. But can those skills really, really translate to somebody that actually can give him some really good competition, Gabriel? In my opinion, I think that's what's lacking from Boo Boo. I don't even know why I call him Boo Boo. But Demetrius, I think that's what's lacking, you know. You go, Boo Boo. I think that's what's lacking.
Hey,
I want to see him. Hey, Boo Boo. He'll put the Ranger, Boo Boo.
He's a little bit, you know, Boo Boo's a little bit bore to me. It's just kind of like there's no ending. You know, it's like if he just didn't seem to want to step it up and really get the guy out of there for like a sustained amount of time. And I wonder if that's because he's killing himself to make weight. We know people kept kind of intimating that all week. They kept seeing him, you know, in plastics in the sauna. So you're kind of wondering, well, what's that about, you know? So I wonder if that's it. If he was like a 60, you know, the money's in the defenses. And they took a while getting him, and he's a big guy already for 54, to that title shot. Now that he's there, you know, they got to make money. keep him there. But I wonder, you know, what that clock looks like. You know, how much time is left on it for him? Because I think that's what's missing. He's clearly craftier. He's learning how to be real low and change levels really nice. And he does some really nice things with his hands, you know, his combinations. But too often it is like the combinations are few and far between, and there's a lot of dead space in between his offense. To me, that's what I wonder with him and where the upside is. And what's it going to be like when somebody really bothers him, when somebody really goes after him? That I want to see.
Well, see, I think you're right about him being a Bor-Bor. I think because, you know what, we've seen him kind of do this. I mean, Monterosian was actually a good fighter. What happened to him that night when they faced each other, I don't really know. It was almost like he just kind of fell into, you know, a stage. He had a stage fright segment, episode. And but once you see Demetrius do something good, he does it over and over repeatedly. There's like no second gear. There's no third gear. There's no anxiety to try to get the guy out of there, you know, in a spectacular fashion. It's more like I'm comfortable and just kind of outpointing him. I'm comfortable being the more gifted fighter in there. Not the most exciting fighter in there, but just the more gifted fighter in there. And I understand that they're trying to build up his craft. They're trying to polish him up a little bit more, but it just comes down to it where, okay, we've seen exactly where you're at. It's time for you to now take the next step up.
That's the thing. You know, I want to see him face a puncher, somebody that's aggressive. Brian Rose just seemed like soft first defense. You know, it just didn't seem – it just wasn't a fight that led anywhere for me. It just, you know – just, you know, kind of like Steve used to call them mismandatories, you know? That's really what this fight was. It was just, you know, the business of, I guess, making Demetrius Andrade look good. But ultimately, you know, it just didn't really tell us anything about him except that he's, you know, we saw some different things. I thought, like I said, his center of gravity has changed. He's really kind of learned to be lower, and so he has his legs under him a little bit better. But consequently, you know, it's just, I don't know what it is. It's his nature. His demeanor in there is a little too passive for my taste.
A little bit. You know, there's a split between the boxing community about the decision that happened on the main event with Ruslan Provokhanov versus Chris Algieria. What were your thoughts, man? Honestly, I thought Chris did it. I thought he just, you know, Ruslan had the pressure. He was coming forward. But one or two, three big heavy shots just doesn't do it for me. I just can't give a guy the whole round when he's throwing two or three punches. And here's another thing, too, that I don't think HBO or anybody was giving Chris the credit that when Chris was throwing punches, now granted, he's not a puncher, but when he was throwing punches, Ruslan's head was snapping back. And it wasn't just once or twice. It was snapping back numerous times off the jab or from the straight right. And like I said, Ruslan had the pressure, but to me, it was Chris that still controlled the tempo of that fight.
No question. I thought HBO was awful in this fight. They just really, you know, actually, I take that back. Andre Ward was very good. He recognized what was going on. He pointed it out. I loved his insight when he talked about the ring, which was not regulation. And it was strange because nobody talked about, you know, none of the boxing writers unearthed that. I was surprised that Andre, you know, he did our job in a sense and found out, you know, why is that? Why did New York allow a ring that was not regulation to be used? But he brought that to light, and I thought that was great. You know, he sometimes gets a lot of grief across the board, and I think he's actually a very good boxing analyst. But, it was an Algieri fight. You know, it wasn't a Provodnikov fight. He boxed. He moved. He was very smart. He stayed poised, and even, you know, I watched it twice, and the second time I noticed just how poised he was, and that, you know, other than the knockdowns in round one, he's kind of winning that round. He boxed well, he got up, he was poised, he took a knee, you know, the second knockdown, gathered himself, got back to the game plan, and you can't give him the round, and you can't even make it like a 10-8, you know, negate one of the knockdowns or anything like that, but he was very poised in what he was doing, and then by the second round, he had himself, you know, gathered, and I didn't see Provodnikov doing a lot. And I think I've been a bigger, you know, and longer proponent of Provodnikov than anyone. There are certain things I just go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, one thing that we've always noticed, and this is something that's like a trend, is when a puncher knocks down a guy in the first or second round, sometimes the fight is over for that fighter. And with Provodnikov, we obviously saw that. He dropped him. To me, after that first round, the fight was over for him. Like, he came out, I did my job, I dropped him. It should have been a stoppage. I'm done. That's all I got. Because after that, you just kind of see him just kind of trailing along, following him, trying to get a big punch out of there, but never really worked to get the big punch. You know, it was almost like he was just hoping that left hook was going to land, that Chris was going to walk right into it. It never happened for him. He never set it up. And he landed it again,
like in the third, and Chris looked at him, tapped his gloves, and like, let's go. That happened again later in the fight. But if you notice that he more and more, because of that damaged eye, and because of this, the just kind of one-dimensional attack, Chris adjusted, and he started catching that punch. It was never really much of a problem later. And even when he got knocked down, he wasn't hurt. He got damaged. His eye got damaged, and he got stunned by the shot, you know. And he was all of a sudden in a much more crisis situation than he'd been a second ago. But he didn't get up on shaky feet. The second time he took a knee, he got up, he wasn't shaky. He's just like, you know, I'd rather take a, you know, a little time out here, gather myself. He was very poised. He fought like a guy ready for the moment. And it took HBO a while to say it, but he's a two-time kickboxing champion, two-time world champion in that sport. And they kind of kept saying kickboxing like it was somehow lesser than. But it's like those guys actually get kicked all over their body. They have to deal with that.
Right.
But it's also in the form of boxing. So they're very close to us. You know, it was just kind of funny watching them. And they didn't really roll out much of his history. And you and I had interviewed him, 2 years ago? So we knew what we were dealing with Chris. And you know, I didn't pick him to win, but I certainly picked him to be a problem. And we both wondered why this fight was ever made. I never really liked it. I should have listened to my gut in this thing, because Ruslan, he just negated everything he did. And they kept talking about his power punching, how hard he hits. You can't quantify that. Really, if he's not wobbling him and he isn't knocking him down other than the first round, is he really hitting him harder? I mean, I don't know. It was just very strange to me. They just kind of docked him for not having knockout power. But he was landing clean. Like you said, it was very clean, effective punching. That's the rule, not harder hitting or, you know, ineffective aggression. It's not heavy, sporadic punching. You know, it's boxing.
You know, in that sense of the ring being smaller, HBO, you know, being who they are, you know, which was going for the house fighter, it was almost like even half of the fans out there were in the same, they were like in the same line of, you know, Ruslan had to have won this fight. This fight was just won by him. This was a robbery. There was just no way in hell that Chris could have done
Steve Weisfeld, yeah. Chris doing this, and this. However, I have Ruslan Provodnikov winning because he's hitting harder. What kind of logic is that?
That logic was just terrible. And you know what? I don't even know why Steve is on there doing the unofficial score. He didn't do a very good job as a judge in the first place when he was a judge.
He's terrible. He doesn't even sound good on TV. You can't even say, well, he's a shitty judge, but he's really good on TV. No, he's not even good on TV.
No,
it's like
he's even worse.
He has nothing to say of note, and his voice is annoying.
Right.
Oh, good. That way we have two shitty things that I have to deal with for the next 30 years of my life.
You know, the thing, too, about Chris, what I liked with Chris, you know, and this was my whole thing going into the prediction with that fight, was I threw it out there on Twitter. I said, my question about Chris is his chin and his heart. And he answered both questions on that first round. He got back up,
dude,
took the shot fairly well, and you know what? His heart showed up. I mean, his chin showed up for 12 rounds. Ooh. For 11 rounds. He, you know, wasn't able to get rocked again.
Durability.
His conditioning was phenomenal, and nobody was giving him credit. I mean, look at his legs. His legs were still fresh all the way down to the 12th round. You know,
dude,
this is a guy that's going to get.
It was not Provodnikov's power or the raw animal livers that he eats during training camp. The story was that Chris Algieri has got a master's degree in nutritional science, and that he's in fantastic shape, and he knows how to make weight, for especially being a guy his size, like better than other people. That was what was in my article anyways, and you could watch it. This is a guy that knew how to fight using all of his limbs for 12 rounds and did so at a world-class level twice. Like, you know, I'm not saying, like, damn it, they should listen to this because we picked him, but, you know, you should at least have the information when the fight's going on and reality is playing out in front of you.
And he makes 140 just that more interesting. Now, going back with, you know, Ruslan Provokhanov, I got to tell you this. There's folks already writing him off. There's folks already saying, this guy, you know what, he's billed as much as we can cash in on him. You got to just give it up, walk away. You know what? This guy's still a problem for anybody. And I think, Chris, on that night, I think it would have gave anybody fits. You know, it's styles make fights. And even Ruslan was able to recognize that. He said that this style just doesn't work for me. I need somebody that's going to be there in front of me so I can hit, somebody I can tag. You know, the sad part about it is that nobody, you know, leaned over and whispered to Ruslan, is like, hey, that's not the way things work. You know, you're supposed to work for that knockout or for that stoppage or for the decision all 12 rounds, not one or two rounds, and then give up.
Well, I think, too, is that the thing that was missing for him in this fight that wasn't in the other fights, like, you know, with Bradley and Alvarado, was how hungry he was. He wanted to show that he belonged at that level, and then he was pissed because he thought he did, and then he didn't get the decision. He was expecting to win this fight, and that was the 20% difference. I had the tiger, you know?
You know what? Somebody, I can't remember who it was. They threw it out on Twitter, and I hope he throw it out there again. But they said that. They had asked before the fight. They said, I hope that Ruslan is prepared for this fight because it doesn't look like he might be up for it. Because it was not a big name. It was not a fight that he was looking for. And I actually was like, oh, you know what? That's actually a good question. Is he going to be up for that fight? And that first round obviously showed us he was up for that fight. But after that, you just kind of saw a guy that was just, you know, just being there, really, you know?
He wasn't
happy
to
be there. I don't know. It was
weird. I mean, he was up to win. He wasn't up to earn that win, in a sense. You know what I mean? He was down to knock Chris Algieri out and get to those big fights, but he wasn't down to, like, oh, God, I got a puzzle in front of me. I've got all these other ways that I can beat this guy. Let's really showcase my skills. There's a difference, you know? He wasn't fully ready, I don't think. And that in the style. I mean, Chris Algieri is like almost, I would say, a better version of Paul Williams, in a sense. He's tall for the size. He's going to throw a lot of punches, but they're straighter. They're real punches. They're not like kind of slap punches. And he really knows about how to keep his distance. He's a real fighter. You know, they shouldn't have treated him. They kept saying he came to the sport late. Then he came to boxing late. He's been fighting since he was 9 years old. He's just been doing different disciplines.
It was like a 6-1. I think he was like 6-1 underdog, which was really surprising. Me and Brian the Fog had talked about it on Friday. And even Brian was saying, like, wow, that's kind of terrible. You know, it's not a lot of folks know about who Chris is.
Plus 550. You know, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, that it was, man. Hey, let's pass this to fight fans really quick and see what they think about that, what they thought about that fight. Let's go with area code 714. You're on live right now and Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind? Okay. Watching cartoons or listening to Leave a Ring? I have no idea. Let's go with area code 860. You're on live right now. Leave a Ring. What's on your mind?
Yo.
What up, Rob?
Oh, I didn't even know it was me. I was like, what the f-? But, yeah. let me tell you the horrible mistake I made, which I am not making again on Saturday night. So the whole day I'm busy. I'm doing work. Coming home late. And I'm like, you know what? Ruslan's probably going to walk through this guy. I'm not going to watch it. I'm going to turn on UFC. Mistake. What I got from UFC.
Wow.
Okay.
You suck.
Now,
you are fired, Rob.
Yo, what I... Let me tell you guys the terrible night that ensued. Good God. Okay. I'm a big fan of MMA, right? I watch all types of MMA. I watch kickboxing, Glory, K1. I can go on and on about all those, you know, different Bellator, whatever. I'm a big fan. But what happened on that night was ridiculous. 6 hours of boredom. I was just, oh, horrible fights, horrible refereeing, horrible judging, horrible commentating, horrible promotions. I was just watching a main event with two midgets. You know, this guy, Demetrius Johnson, runs around the cage for like 5 rounds, can't finish somebody with head kicks to the face. It was ridiculous. And then this guy's pound for pound, like, oh, my God. It was like Manny Pacquiao Nuthuggers, like from 2010 all over again. It was ridiculous. So, and then I'm here. I get, like, notifications on my phone. Oh, Algieri's upsetting. He's up on the cards. And I'm like, what's going on? But here I'm, like, you know, watching this boring-ass UFC event. Good God. ESPN fighters apparently are relevant. Wow. That guy, his name is Boo Boo. He's irrelevant just because his name is Boo Boo. You're not recovering from that.
I'm interested in how he got the nickname. I mean, I want to know who gave him the nickname and why he decided to keep that nickname.
Probably a fat ex-girlfriend. Like, I mean...
You know what? Tell me if I'm wrong. Is that not by far the worst boxing nickname you've ever heard?
No.
Bernard Hopkins. That was for the Martian.
Sugar Poo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Sugar Poo.
Kid Chocolate, questionable.
My personal favorite, though, is Swamp Donkey. I think that is
That was a good
champ.
One.
Yeah,
that was
Swamp
a good
Donkey
nickname,
is
I can take it if Swamp Donkey knocked me out and somebody asked me, like, so who knocked you out last night? Swamp Donkey. But to go so who laid you out last night? Boo Boo.
Yeah, like, oh my God, the Boo Boo. Like, if you gave me like a contract of like guys I was gonna fight, and somebody said you're gonna fight the Tijuana Tornado, the, you know, Cuban Cyclone, and or El Ciclón de Guantánamo, or, you know, El Chapo, and then you're gonna fight Boo Boo. What? Give me Boo Boo. Like, what? Who's that? Who's that? It doesn't even matter at that point.
Yeah. He sounds like the softest guy out of the bunch, you know. Yeah, give me Boo Boo. I'll take Boo Boo out of all those guys right now you just mentioned, you know.
Oh, my God, dude. Oh, speaking of bad nicknames, Demetrius Johnson, who headlined the UFC card, horrible UFC card, his name is Mighty Mouse. Oh, my God. Dude, I swear, if there was any fighter professional that was champion in any sport that I saw and fought, and I was thinking to myself, if you gave me 8 months, I could probably whoop this guy's ass. It's Demetrius Johnson. Oh, my God.
What happened here? Did we go to, like, an MMA hour or something like that?
Yeah, that was – it was – I just had to because I'm so tired.
Yeah, it's kind
of
an undercover MMA. What's going on here, Rob? Are you trying to get
I'm so tired of UFC.
I guess I throw out that old phrase we used to say back in the days. If it's not boxing, Rob, I don't care.
Those were the days we used to say that. When we had those 2 weeks that we had those MMA fanboys coming on the show, that was crazy. I've been into the hype, though. It was pretty funny when Mike Tyson did punch Dana White on the jet, though. He played a prank on Dana White and got him to get out of the chair. But, yeah, it was a good boxing event from what I saw. Rematch, probably going to happen. I'm not into, just for the record, I'm not into fighters who do not avenge losses.
I don't think so.
I don't know. I mean, it might not happen, but I'm not into fighters who don't avenge losses, especially prospects that have those weird losses. Like Adonis Stevenson avenged his loss, albeit that the guy was like 45. But
I even like a guy that will go back and clarify a win. You know, like Chad Dawson, Glenn Johnson. It's like, all right,
yeah,
it was close. Let's do this again. I agree with you. That was kind of bothered me that although you can talk to many people and see why this didn't happen, and they'll have different reasons. But Hopkins in Trinidad, De La Hoya in Trinidad. Like, how do you not do those fights again? You know,
Molina De La Hoya. Really though, that one I wanted to see again.
Really, really, that's interesting.
Yeah,
that's a tough fight. I mean, did you think Molina won?
I didn't think he won, but I think prospect of being De La Hoya, and him being such a star, Molina kind of being that guy that wasn't really exactly given the respect he deserved going into that fight,
sure.
and not being the known Puerto Rican fighter at the time, I think his career and boxing and the rivalry between Puerto Rico and Mexico could have got a big boost if the rematch was given. But
that's valid. That's valid. Yeah.
I would have. I honestly wanted to see the I Corte versus De La Hoya rematch.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, De La Hoya talked about that fight. An interview I did with him a couple of years ago, back when I was still in L.A. He talked about that fight being kind of his first rite of passage in as a pro fight, with the Molina fight, where the dude just wouldn't take no for an answer and was just down to jack him up, you know? That was a tough fight. It was a good fight. But, yeah, those
great
fights
fight.
Are weird. It's like they win, you win, and you just kind of like, all right, I'm out of here, you know? Like Garcia and Herrera, like I don't think they'll ever do that rematch because I don't think Danny wants any part of that again. And you just take the win
no.
and you look good in the next one, you know?
Well, let's be honest.
But
here. Let's be honest here, Chris and Marcos. They don't bring economically a whole lot, and that's why those fights are going to happen again. You know, it's just it's a demand for the hardcore boxing fans, but you know, for the promoters to look at their wallet, it's not very enticing. They're not going to go like, well, let's jump over each other just to get this match to happen. I don't think the networks are really that far interested in seeing it all over again as well.
I was going to ask you guys, speaking on boxing and what brings money, I was thinking of how boxing could become more of a mainstream sport without the fans mainstream having to do research, because that's the problem. A lot of fans don't want to do research. They don't want to take time out of their normal day lives, you know, to look up some fighter from Canada or the UK. Should they put amateur, really solid, well, I'm talking like 80-0, like guys that are 80-5, 80-0, you know, guys that are going to turn pro and be prospects, like heavy prospects, kind of like how De La Hoya was in Amir Khan. Should they put these guys on main cards in the amateur fights and just have the two kind of co-main event and main event be professional fights and have like a lot more amateur star versus amateur star boxing fights?
I think that's an interesting idea. I mean, I think maybe not more in the sense that it shouldn't dominate the card. But if you could do that, mix in with people, just at least for the big pay-per-views, start mixing in like a little tournament, you know, two-on-two or, you know, yeah, featuring guys, at least like, you know, two matches of amateur stars. I think that would be very interesting. And I don't know what it would do to their amateur status, but AIBA, you know, the last couple, 3 years, has moved towards trying to lure pros back to the Olympics the way that they've done with, they're using the basketball model. And on some of the other sports now are just using pros, and it becomes an exhibition out there for your country. It's an interesting idea. I mean, I think promotionally it could be fun. I don't know how USA Boxing would feel about it, but you know, USA Boxing has been a failing company for a very long time. So unless some of the new guys really have better ideas on how to grow that business, I would take exception that they're exceptions to anything that would get these guys a bigger name and a bigger piece of the marketing pie down the line.
I just don't ever see boxing going into the mainstream, to tell you the truth. I mean, I think we're going to be as far as we can get mainstream-wise just because the fact that, you know, it's – you know what? It just boils down to people want to see knockouts. People want to see exciting fights, and they don't want to see it go for 12
yeah.
rounds. You know, the average casual fan does not sit more than 3 or 4 rounds. They'll get up and they'll start having a conversation at whoever's house they're watching a pay-per-view event. They'll go outside to the barbecue or grab a beer. They'll go to the bathroom, take the extra minutes, and then they'll come back. They kind of looking for the spots where the rounds are exciting and for that knockout. If somebody
yeah.
can deliver what Mike Tyson was doing back in the days, those 1-2 rounds of knockouts on pay-per-view or on your telly, that's what attracts them and that's what grabs them. But other than that, giving them a good storyline, it's hard to find in boxing because there's so many of them, but there's got to be an attraction to it. And it's got to be delivered correctly. And that's one thing that boxing lacks nowadays is a certain deliverance. We don't seem to know how to deliver the story. We kind of just want to throw out the package without having a description of how to open the package.
Because do you think that Lucien Bute – being that he's he was a pretty big star. He was kind of at the crust of breaking through into really mainstream boxing. He was right there in Karl Frotch, of course, you know. What? All right. You know, right now we have Gennady Golovkin, and I think Dave saw the fight I uploaded on, I had shared it on Facebook. I didn't know this, but Gennady Golovkin knocked Lucien Bute out in the amateur
boxing
ring.
Right.
Yeah, like, wouldn't you think that would be more exciting if you had, if people, mainstream fans had seen these guys fight in the amateurs, seen them turn pro, turn into big stars, and then they start, you know, a lot more people see these guys, and they say, well, I want to see them fight again without all the protective gear and, you know, being that they're more polished and stuff. It's kind of like college basketball and, you know, professional basketball. That's where the fan bases come
from. It's a gamble. It's a gamble, though, see, because you never really know what you're going to get in the amateurs. You know, you're going to get a guy that – look, most amateur fighters are in there for a point system. They're not in there to sit down and their punches.
Yeah.
That's not what they're looking for to do. They're looking to outpoint and get in and out. So that's not intriguing to – The guy that's a fly-by, you know, fan, the guy that just sits there, that came home and flipping through the channels and runs across boxing. Those type of amateur fights are for guys like us that actually are looking for that scheduled date to sit down and kind of get to know, trying to get up and close and personal with this amateur fighter so that we can follow them throughout their career to see how they blossom. Other folks don't want to do that at all. You know, I think our society's already showed that we're here and there. One minute we're a fan of this, the next minute we're not a fan anymore. It's proven. It's a system that is just never going to be fixed. And it's because we like it. We like the way the system is. Regardless of how much we bitch and complain, I think Gabriel will agree with me, boxing does not want to be fixed. It doesn't care to be fixed. It likes exactly where it's at. And that's with wounded legs.
Yeah, I mean, any attention or any coverage is good coverage, you know, so that's how boxing's kind of operated, controversial or not. Any attention is good attention, and it goes to the fact, I mean, there's a lot of plus sides I see for the fighters more than the fans, well, fighting on amateur and going on to main cards and pay-per-view, because you get those nerves out of your way early in your career where it doesn't really matter, and when you turn professional, you're already used to the big stage. You know, there's stuff like that. And maybe, you know, maybe these kids, really young kids, their testosterone's going crazy, their hype, you know, maybe them being on a card like that would make them be more aggressive and whatever, give them more hunger, but who knows? It's a big risk, like you said, but it's something interesting, or maybe some fighters meeting or something like that, like an award show, because that's another thing. We don't have really awards that go out on main television on HBO.
Don't. Yeah, you know? We don't. You know, here's the thing, that a couple years back we had the World Series of Boxing, and had a great platform the way it was set up. Now, that was on Versus, but the failing part about it was that there was really – boxing is something that if you're going to have a league, or if you're going to have an amateur, like, you know, the American Association of Boxing, there's got to be a money man. There's got to be, you know, some type of money flow that's going to back it up to kind of be pushed in the face of whoever you're trying to get in front of. That's where it kind of falls down to, you know, and this is where it gets really not tricky in boxing, but very simple in boxing, that everybody in the sport of boxing, and if you've been in the business of boxing, you've covered the sport for as long as we have been covering it, you're going to agree with me on this. Everybody in boxing don't want to spend money in boxing. They just want to gain from it.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest problem with boxing. That's the biggest problem with boxing is nobody. I mean, even fans out there, you know, they don't want to spend money. How many fans do you know go out to a meet and greet that want to spend money, or, you know, log on to a website and buy a fighter's T-shirt or any of that type of stuff? You imagine if we charge people to listen to Leaving the Ring, I think our listeners would probably be down to 20 people. You know what I mean? You know, the most. Nobody wants to spend money, but we all want to gain from it. So that's the biggest problem that we have in our sport. Hey, Rob, thanks for calling in, brother. I'm going to put you back on hold, okay?
Yeah, no problem, man. Good show.
Thanks, man. You too.
Anyways, fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. Don't forget to download the mobile app, Leaving the Ring, to your iPhone or your Android so you can catch up with today. Today right now is playing Boxeo Tijuana Radio. It's a really good all-Spanish boxing segment. You got to check it out. Don't forget, every Monday at 5 p.m. Pacific time, 8 Eastern time is the next round with Gable Montoya and Mr. Steve Kim. Also on every Tuesday, yours truly here on Leaving the Ring Radio at 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. So don't forget to tune in on those two special days. Hey, you know, I got a bunch of emails and people asking me what's going on at the Boxing Blitz. Hey, you know what? I've kind of dropped the ball on that, man. I've just been so busy, but I'm going to get back on it. I'm like the brink of finishing it. I'm just there, but I'm like right there where I need somebody to literally push me off that edge. You know what I mean, Gabriel? Like my toes are bare, they're hanging off the ledge, but I need somebody literally just to push me off so I can finish this Boxing Blitz, and I can add that to the mobile app. Fight fans, you want to call in? 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing here. Hey, let's do the fight schedule. You know, there's not a whole lot to talk about here on Leaving the Ring, man. It's fairly quiet out there in the boxing world. You know, there's not a lot of
Bruce
excitement.
Binko, leave Golden Boy. Yet another top level executive, another, you know, Richard Schaefer guy, as well as Nicole, I believe she was the executive assistant with Richard. She was the one that answered the phones. She's gone. I really enjoyed talking to her. She was a good person. Bruce Binko, you know, whatever. But interesting stuff happening over there. Yeah, here we are with the fight schedule. This week,
that's,
you know,
not surprising, though.
To break.
No. I kind of assumed that was going to happen. Everybody that was under the coattail of Dick Schaefer was going to go with him. You know, so
yeah, exactly. You know, and I don't think that's a sinking ship, though. I think it's just, you know, it's getting a facelift. It's L.A. It happens.
And you know what? Answer a lot of folks' questions out there about Al Haymon is, you know, what is, does he continue going on about his business? Absolutely. He just signed somebody from, I believe, from like Fresno or something like that, a 6'2 welterweight. Let me look for it. I can't remember exactly the name of the kid, but he's doing his thing. He signed a heavyweight as well just recently.
Let me see. Who did he sign? Al's got Al. You know, he's just going to do his thing. And
Fresno, 6'2 welterweight. Marcos Hernandez, Al Haymon just signed him. 6'2 welterweight,
yeah.
Man. So that's interesting.
So still stockpiling things, you know, Al is. And we'll see what he does. You know, I have no idea where this is all going to end up. It's very exciting stuff. But, Bruce Binko is out. Here we go with the fight schedule. Saturday, June 21st, at the Subhub Center in Carson, California, on Showtime, Robert Guerrero versus Yoshihiro Kamagai. Welterweights, 10 rounds in action. Guerrero's been off for quite a while. We haven't seen him in the ring.
And comes back with the right opponent.
Well,
comes
I don't
back
know,
with
man.
The right opponent. I mean,
you think Kamagai's
the
right guy for him?
I think he's the right guy for him. I think he's the right guy for Robert to make a comeback on and stop. I'm not very impressed with the opponent they selected for him, but I understand why he was selected. You know,
he's going to be very easy to hit. He's going to be aggressive. He doesn't necessarily fight outside of Japan. He's done it, you know, a couple times, and kind of, you know, went a draw with Jorge Silva. He stopped Hector Munoz, but these are guys that are not, you know, world beaters. Everything but those has been also Carson, he dropped a decision, and kind of a wide decision to Johan Perez. This is back last June. So I don't see much changing. I mean, we'll see, you know. In
I don't either.
Been out for a long time. He could get caught. Probably not, though. But you know, stranger things have happened.
Here's
he
my thing.
Last May with Floyd, and he didn't look good in that fight. So I am very curious to see what he's like.
Well, it's against Floyd. I mean, it's really hard to look great against Floyd. But here's my thing, and I wanted to get on that conference call because I'm not sure if anybody even asked this question. But this is my question to Robert, you know, and we've tried to get Robert here on Leaving the Ring. It's just, it's been like now impossible to get him on. But my question is like, why they layoffs? Why so many layoffs in between fights now? You know, it's like, it's starting to become like a trend. Like, you know, you get your steam going, it starts going, and all of a sudden it halts. Even after the loss with Floyd, I think anybody could have been forgivable about that. You know, it was against the, you know, one of the best fighters in the world. You know, you lost against them. Why did you stop for almost over a year? and decide I'm going to come back. It's like you're starting all over again. You have to start all over again to make people like you and believe in you. I don't understand the business move or the marketing move. It to me, it's just terrible whoever's giving them advice about, you know, taking – is it an injury you guys are trying to hide? What's really going on? I like to really understand why the layoffs, Gable. I mean, isn't it weird to you? It's just weird to me that this guy keeps, you know, coming and going, you know? You don't build a fan base like that.
No, you don't build anything like that. That's a good question. I didn't go in the conference call either, so I don't know. And I can't apparently get an interview with him, so I have no idea, you know? No real insights there. But and that's just kind of – I don't know. We'll see, you know? I mean, what's a year like? I mean, they kind of hit me with a press release about him doing CrossFit now. And so I'm sure a lot of guys ask questions about his new CrossFit workout, but – I mean, I don't know. Have you ever done CrossFit? I don't know anything about it. I just wonder.
Yeah, I've done it. I'm actually, I did it about a month ago. And you know what? It's a great conditioning, you know, something to be conditioned for. But how it relates to boxing, I guess because you want to be more conditioned. I think it's just something else, like when your body plateaus at something, you want to try to jump start it again, get that type of energy and motivation to kind of kickstart your body, you know what I mean, to put it back into shock. Maybe that was the reason for it, but at the same time, you know, everybody experiments to try to better themselves in boxing, but the only way to be good in boxing and to stay consistent in boxing, in my opinion, is to fight. Keep fighting and stop taking long layoffs.
I agree. I mean, it's how you stay in your weight. It's how you stay sharp. It's how you add new tools, just do experience, and just being in the ring. It's time on stage, man. You cannot – there is no substitute for it.
You know what I mean? It's like a great singer, you know, Elvis Presley and Stevie Wonder, those guys. You know, they were consistent. They got on stage. They worked on their craft. You continue. Oh, here's another thing. You know, the old-time fighters, they fought consistently. They fought 4 to 5 to 6 times out of the month. They stayed on fight mode all the time. They didn't look for an outlet. They didn't look for anything outside of boxing to try to get them to be, what, extra skillful or aggressive or give them that energy boost. Right now, we're in an age, to me, we're like in this age right now, in this time frame of we need to find something to get that extra edge. Rather than doing it the traditional way, we got to find it on a shortcut. It just doesn't work. To me, it just doesn't work. Call me old-fashioned. It doesn't work.
Well, I mean, I'm a big fan of different training techniques and kind of waking up the body, like you're saying, you know, shocking the body, if you will, into new things. I think that's really important. You can really plateau, you know. But, like, and that's how you got to go stale. You know, your mind gets bored, your body gets used to it, and it's just over. But I don't know. We'll see what CrossFit does for him. I think that was all just kind of marketing stuff, you know. There's no real substitute for fighting and for actually being active.
There isn't. But you know what? You know what? What you just said right now, you know, shock the body. You know, you kind of challenge your body. Well, you know what? Here's a great way of challenging as a fighter. You look for the extra step of a challenge. You look for the toughest fight out there. That's the way you challenge yourself. That's the way the old-timers did it. You know, if they were dominant in a weight, what did they do? They jumped up. They went after the biggest, baddest guy at the next weight in that division. That's the way things are traditionally done. I understand. You want to get that. You want to try to boost yourself. You're trying to get your body to do something a little extra. That's absolutely great. The time off doesn't make any sense to me. Because now you got to go back and kind of shake off the ring rust and – it just doesn't – it makes no sense. But anyways, that's enough of that, man. I got Robert Guerrero by – I think he's going to go all the rounds. I don't know. I'm not sure if he's going to stop him. I wouldn't be surprised he stops him, but I think it's going to take him a while. It's going to be an ugly fight, and I think it's going to take him a while to get the juices going just because of the long layoff that he's had. And that CrossFit is going to do some good because it's going to keep him in the rounds and in the distance that he needs to be at. So, you know, my head is saying that Robert Guerrero takes it by decision.
Yeah, I'll take I got the Guerrero by decision as well. I agree with you. I think he may stop him, but I think we're going to find out whether or not he can real early on in the first few rounds. I think he's going to come down a little straighter than Kamagai, and we're going to, you know, he's going to be able to touch him. So I think we'll find out within the first, like, two rounds.
Kamagai's best bet is cut him, you know?
Well, I think to cut him, to come forward, to bang him up on the inside and be rough with him. And we'll see if, you know, what his power really is. He's got like 21 knockouts, like 26 wins. We'll see what that power, how that translates over. I tend to think that I'm sorry, 21 knockouts and 24 wins. He's got 26 total fights. We'll see. I don't know. I'm going with Guerrero by decision.
Yeah.
Also on that card, there's a lot of fights on that card, but in support there, we got Devin Alexander versus Jesus Soto Cross, welterweights, 10 rounds. We'll save the best for last after this breakdown. I think this is going to be a short night for Jesus Soto Cross. 5 or 6 rounds, I think Alexander can look really good here. If he's aggressive, I think he can really bang out Jesus Soto Cross. I like the guy. He's a great guy, really fun interview. He's given his all to the sport, but I think it's coming down to the end. And I just think that's what this fight's for. The way Thurman took apart Soto Cross, and really the last couple rounds, you could just see it get knocked out of him. And I expect Alexander just to do cleanup duty.
You know, I agree with you, man. I said this. I said, I wonder how much more is left out of Soto Cross. This guy's been in a lot of ring wars, not just in the general public, but in the gyms as well. This is a guy that his style is fit to only last for so many years. You got to crunch in so many fights to keep him exciting, to keep him relevant, because once the gas gets low, it can have a quarter, but it's going to look empty. That engine's going to look empty. And I think he might be at that quarter right now where he's going to look empty against Devin Alexander. Timing is everything. We saw that when Cotto got in with Sergio Martinez. Timing is everything sometimes in boxing. Father Time can catch up with you, but more importantly, not just Father Time can catch up to you, but ring wear can catch up with you a lot quicker than Father Time. And that's what's going to happen with Soto Cross, man. I'm hoping that he can pull it off because he's a tough, tough, rugged Mexican warrior. He can cut off the ring. He's tall. He's lanky. He punches hard. When you try to tie him up, he will rough you up. He has faced fast guys like Andre Berto and Mike Jones, but like I said, he's really on that tail end of his career. Can he rejuvenate himself? Can he get himself back together for one last big fight? I'm not really sure, man. Right now, what my head is telling me and what I'm looking out down on paper is Devin Alexander is getting Soto Cross at the right moment and the right time of Soto Cross's career. So I'm going to go with Devin Alexander. I think that you're right. I think he stops him around the 8th or 9th round.
Yeah, somewhere in there. I mean, I just think he... You know, the fight is a bit dangerous because Devin's not a power puncher. So the fight could, you know, be extended, and he could get more and more damage, which, you know, that's kind of a frightening outcome. But I just think his speed and everything, Alexander's going to be able to lay into him and get out of the way, not tire too much. And the other thing is, you know, you look at Thurman, he can be wobbled a little bit. You look at Berto, he could be knocked out, and you could be dropped heading into that fight with Soto Cross. Alexander really isn't like that. I mean, you can shake him up in things, but I think he just seems more durable to me than those other guys. I don't expect him to have a hiccup. I think he's technically good enough to get this done.
The only way I see Devin Alexander not doing his job and not taking this victory is if he decides, I don't know, his legs get old, that Porter fight really got in his head. It doesn't allow him to let his hands go. A lot of things could have happened with that Porter fight. But there's nothing in that Porter fight that tells me that's going to happen with him facing Soto Cross. I think that Porter was just a much better fighter. He had the much better game plan. He was all over Devon Alexander, and that's what you got to do. You got to smother him with speed and with aggressiveness. Sorta Cross has aggressiveness, but he just doesn't have the speed. Not just with the hand speed, but with the foot speed. He's not very fast on anything that he does. He's consistent, and he throws some, you know, some wild swinging punches, and they're heavy-handed. That's something that may concern the Alexander team, but it's not going to be a major concern because once they get clipped, I think they're going to make a quick adjustment to it, and that's what's going to keep them in the fight, and that's what's going to take over the fight is going to be those adjustments. And, you know, with Soto Karas, like I said, he's a rugged guy. He does things over and over, and it sometimes works for him, but you never see him adjust. You never see him think in the ring. You just kind of see him move in the ring.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, if Soto Karas can maneuver around some of the things that Alexander does well, he's got a shot, you know. He might be able to extend the fight, get Alexander tired. We'll find out if Alexander can see his coming and time them right, if he can take them if he does get hit by them. There are valid questions here, you know, but I just tend to think that this is the end of the road. I mean, they've been using Soto Karas for this role for a little while now, and he'd been this for his career, really. The slower guy doesn't have to take punishment in order to give it. And I think just now he's going to give. This is that moment, you know. It's a bummer to watch. I really am a big fan of it.
I was going to say, it is a bummer to watch because, you know what, the kid has a great smile, great personality. When I saw him at the Maywood, when I see him at Boxy events, I mean, just full of life, man. Really joyful person to be around. Have great conversation with them. He was really a guy that sat back and waited patiently, waiting for his turn to get on that spotlight. You know, when Margarito was the guy that everybody was talking about, he was the guy that was behind him. He was right behind him watching because he was a sparring partner for a long time. Now that his time is here, it's sad because, like I said, that type of style is a style that only has a good run for like good 6-7 years. And if you don't catch him if they don't get lucky in that beginning run of that style, you're going to get the tail end, and it's going to be short-lived of that career that you're going to be able to cherish and watch of him. And I think that's what we got from Soto Karas. Now, do I want the kid to win? Absolutely. We all want the underdog to win. It would be great to see him do the upset, but I just can't see it right now. I want to see it. I definitely want to see it. It'd be the highlight of the night, I tell you the truth, in my opinion. It'd be a great story that Soto Karas was on his way out but just got too stubborn enough and said, nope, kick the door back open and walk right through the doors and said, I'm still here and I'm staying. That would be a great story. But I don't know if it's going to happen, man. We'll find out. That's why Saturday night we sit down and watch these type of events. And this is why we love the sport of boxing.
Yeah, no doubt. Did you just cut out? Did you just mute yourself?
No, I didn't. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh, that's crazy. You like cut off. All right, and the main event. Dominic Brazil versus Devin Vargas for heavyweight. Oh, wait a minute. No, that's not the main event.
No.
Vasyl Lomachenko versus Jerry Russell Jr., featherweight. 12 rounds for the vacant WBO title. I like this fight, dude. This is one of the more intriguing fights in a while. Even, you know, I mean, looking at Provodnikov and Algieri, there was, like, a lot of intangibles. You're like, well, you know, what's his toughness like? What's his, you know, how well is he going to handle the power? You know, he's never been at this level before. You know, is he just a kickboxer? You know, they treated a kickboxer like they did a football player. It's you know, he was in a combat sport. And so you look at this and you're like, well, you got one guy who's heading into his third fight, but he's supposedly the best amateur of all time in Vasyl Lomachenko. Then you've got one of our top amateur prospects and top pro prospects in, you know, U.S. amateur prospects and top U.S. prospects in the pros in Jerry Russell Jr. It's a very interesting fight, you know, but he's had a very soft career, whereas Lomachenko fought Siri Salido in his second fight for a world title, and he almost won at the end. You know, he was losing early on and really did some growing up in that fight, and he came down the stretch and almost came up with all the answers. So, you know, I kind of it's hard to pick who's going to win this fight. I'm leaning towards Lomachenko, though.
You know what? here's the troublesome about this for Gary Russell. Watch Gary Russell's fights. He's got tremendous hand speed. But the one thing that doesn't match those hand speed is he doesn't have upper body movement. He's been hit by lesser guys than Lomachenko, you know, so he's touchable. He can be touched. Now, take nothing
yes.
away with Lomachenko with Orlando Salido. This is a veteran guy, a guy that's crafty, a guy that knows himself, that's been, you know, in with some of the best fighters in the world. And Lomachenko was able to go 12 rounds with him and almost take him out on that 12th round. So to me, whatever Russell has done in that period of time of being a pro, you know what? Lomachenko catched up with 12 rounds, Gable, in my opinion. He caught up with 12 rounds being in there with a world champion.
I tend to agree with you. Plus, he had those WSB fights. You know, he's had the headgear off
yeah.
a little bit longer than, you know, than it looks like. And he did it against guys that were top level. Now, they weren't top level pros, but they were top level amateurs, each and every one of them. That's why they were in the WSB. So I like Lomachenko. I like his learning curve. I like the confidence. He didn't take such a beating that he wasn't able to come back at the end. So I don't think the loss, I think it was encouraging to him. And they came close, and now they're going for the title again. You know, I think it's, I
yeah.
like their style, and I like his style. And I agree with you. Gary Russell's
it's kind
of like a Shane Mosley. Very, very fast hands, very, very fast feet. But his power is nowhere near Mosley's, I don't think. And he's very stiff in the upper body. He can be hit.
You know, the only way – this is the only thing that might be a really sourpuss outcome of a fight or start of the fight is both guys coming in showing respect, both guys trying to be the leader of the dance. That could be a little boring. I kind of see that not before the five rounds. But whoever decides taking the lead, to me, that's going to be the victor. Now, Lomachenko, if Lomachenko goes in there showing Gary Russell respect, it's going to be a long night. Lomachenko needs to go in there and say, "I belong. You may have more fights than me, and you know, and has been in the pro rankings a lot longer than I have, but I belong here." I think if he just goes out to be explosive and goes for it, I think it could be a short night, and I think that it could really puzzle Gary Russell. I think it. I think that Gary Russell is going to, you know, revert to what we've seen happen to him when guys do decide to stand and trade with them, where he starts to open up and he tends to get hit a little bit more when he opens up. But that warrior guy comes out, so it could go either way. I think both guys could rock each other. It just depends on who decides to open up first. And who decides to be a little braver than the other? It's an interesting fight, but I'm leaning with Lomachenko, man. I think Lomachenko can pull it off. I think Lomachenko has the confidence. I think Gary Russell's still trying to find out exactly where he's at and who he is. And this may be a bigger leap of this may be a bigger jump for Gary Russell than it is for Lomachenko right now in terms of their career move.
One of them has been down and dirty with a world champion, and the other one is Gary Russell. So,
yeah.
I'm going to go with Lomachenko.
I'm going with you on that one, brother. Well, fight fans, you know what? We're about the end of our hour. We are going to do two, but there's not a whole lot to talk about, man. So we'll just be dragging our feet and just talking nonsense here on Leaving the Ring, which we don't like to do. But anyways, I appreciate everybody calling in. Right, yeah. And I appreciate everybody, you know, tuning in and calling in right now. We would pass in some fight fans, but I think we covered everything right here on Leaving the Ring. Don't forget to download the app, and don't forget every Monday you got the next round with Gabriel Montoya and Steve Kinn. Tuesday you got All Spanish Boxing Radio, Tijuana Boxing Boxeo Radio, and then you got here Leaving the Ring Radio. We'll catch up with you guys next week on Tuesday. Enjoy your weekend, enjoy the fights, and we'll talk to you on Twitter or on Facebook. Don't worry about it. Hey, and don't drink and drive because you will spill your beer. Have a good night.
Peace.